We are creative entrepreneurs, and we also know how difficult it can be to navigate the journey of entrepreneurship. Today, you are going to unite with other creatives. Let's step out of this isolating experience as business owners, as authors, as podcasters, or speakers, and let's start learning actionable tools you need to build an explosive brand. Let's start creating. Now on with the show.
If you don't know your self-worth, you need to know John Sarasani, because he knows what you're worth, what he's worth, what we're all worth. And we are often so afraid to ask for more. We'll dive a little bit deeper into this, but it's so true. We feel that we cannot ask for more. We cannot ask for more money, more perks, more benefits. But we have John Sarasani here. He is the host of 2000% Raise. He has a book coming out in the near future, which I am definitely going to pre-order when it comes out. You can learn all about him in the show notes. John Sarasani, I betcha he has a lot to say today. Maybe. Or maybe not. Look at him. He's not pumping.
I don't know if that was my cue or not.
That is your cue.
I am excited to be there. I'm watching it through the video screen. It looked like you were still going to say something. But, my intros are usually much longer, Jules.
You know what I'm going to do? I will re-record the intro and you'll be blown away. I'll just talk for 10 minutes It's all about John Sarasani.
I was totally kidding. And you do not need to re-record any of that, even this part right now.
But he's awesome.
Yeah.
He's awesome. Yeah. He's tan. He's got the world at his palm. He's calling his own shots. Seriously. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah. Mr. Sarasani. Some percent raise. The concept is actually that, it's so difficult in corporate America to climb that salary ladder.
Oh, yeah.
At a pace that's any faster than cost of living adjustments from one year to the next.
Sucks. That's a sucky place to be.
It's the truth, isn't it? It's the truth. And, unfortunately, to get a substantial raise in corporate America, you typically need to switch employers. You need to go work somewhere else. And then maybe you go back to that other employer and you're doing the exact same job 4 years later for, double the salary. Who knows? But my concept is that, hey, if you really want to do this the right way, here's the roadmap into going into business for yourself. And corporate America has what I believe has brainwashed all of us to feel like you can't be an entrepreneur, you can't compete. And typically I'm talking about the business to business environment. You need to, the clients only want to work with the corporate giants. They have 20,000 employees, 50 offices. If you go out on your own, you'll never be able to compete with them. And it's just not the case. And I use my past as a guide. I did just that.
I mean, you're a smart guy. Northwestern, correct?
That is correct.
Look at the research my team did.
That is incredible.
Actually, me. Google is my team. But, so you're a smart guy. You started building your professional acumen at an early age. What was the onus for you to say, I can't do this no more?
I was fortunate. I worked in the insurance industry, group and corporate insurance. So it wasn't like selling life insurance or individual policies. It was the bigger, business to business kind of side of it. And I landed a job when I was 25 years old. I left the company I was at to go work with this insurance giant called Arthur J. Gallagher. And I have this perception.
Shout out.
Arthur J. Gallagher. They're big. They're $1 billion Fortune, publicly traded company. Mm-hmm. They're big time. But I got to tell you, I was so excited to get that damn job there. And I was under this, the smoke and mirrors of thinking that there was like something magically that happened there that they were doing for their clients. I'm going to learn all these hot secrets. And then you get there and you learn they're just doing the exact same thing everyone else is. But as an industry, we've developed this perception that really isn't reality. At the end of the day, the deliverables for the client was the exact same thing I was giving to my clients at the other place. Mm-hmm. And after working there for a few years, I'm like, you know what? I could give these same deliverables to my clients working for myself, put myself on top of the org chart and built equity in myself versus somebody else. And that's where the 2000% raise came in. And even more important than just the year-to-year financial piece, you're building freedom for yourself when you own your own company, and you're also putting you're building something you can sell at the end.
Well, true or false, this is a being an entrepreneur is easy. True or false?
I would say, gosh, that's a black and white question, isn't it? I'm going to go with false if I have to answer one or the other.
Well, you have to have a certain kind of grit and resilience to be an entrepreneur, because I do work with a lot of entrepreneurs who give up at month six, year one, because they're not seeing the ROI in what they're giving out.
Right, exactly. And the long-term benefit that you really don't always see very clearly in the beginning is tough. And if you got, you know, bills to pay, walking away from, you know, it's not just what it's costing you right this second, it's the opportunity cost. If you're losing money, not only am I losing a couple grand a month or whatever, I'm also losing the $90,000 I might be making working for someone else right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a tough pill to swallow. So people got to go into that with their eyes wide open, most certainly.
Well, that's why I don't think a lot of people do it, because they are handcuffed, you know, handcuffed to benefits, handcuffed to consistency.
Yeah.
But it's so much more exhilarating doing things on your own and being creative and figuring it all out.
That's so true. And another thing is, you know, not only are they handcuffed, you call them the golden handcuffs.
Golden handcuffs, you know, correct.
Certainly. And the issue on top of it is they're surrounded by people that don't have that entrepreneurial spirit in them, because they're employees just like them, oftentimes W-2 employees. And it might be someone you look up to in your office. Okay, you know what? I really respect that guy. He's my boss. Or she's
I love
my
the
bo-
managers. Exactly. And I she's
heard my managers. Boss. You know, I'm going to be the regional vice president one a day, and I'm going to go.
Chandler Mifflin.
Thank you. Exactly. The assistant to the manager or whatever.
Dwight.
Yeah, exactly. But I got to tell you, though, you know, the mistake people make is they'll go to those people for guidance or advice. You share your idea, say you're 30 years old and you're looking up to a person that's been there longer, say in their 40s or 50s, and you ask them their advice on this idea you got. Well, they can't say it's a good idea, because then they would be saying that, shit, this person that's, you know, below me on the totem pole is going to jump way ahead of me. And, you know, they're not going to say it if they do think it, but chances are they don't even think it anyway, because they're scared to do it themselves.
So true. So true. And even me taking that step into the land of being an entrepreneur, I had the safety net of a husband who makes a decent income. So it wasn't as risky for me.
Right.
But a lot of people that I do talk to, they are so afraid, because it comes down to the money, money, money. But I say, from right now, John, to the last breath you take, is this how you want to be living your life?
Right now? Oh, most certainly.
Well, now, but like, let's, you know, or before. Mary or Sue or Tom.
Well, and I got to tell you, that's something I get into in my book quite a bit. Mm. It's like, look at all this time you're spending. And what are you looking forward to? You're looking forward to your vacation. You're looking forward to retirement one day. You're looking forward to, you know.
Oh, retirement. I mean, you're in retirement, aren't you?
Sort of.
So boring, but you're shaking retirement up.
But, you know, I got a lot of friends, and I got a lot of people in my family that are public school teachers in the state of Illinois, you know, if you're in the right school districts, you get paid pretty well, but they're still waiting. Okay, you know why they're doing it? Because they get to retire early, because they have summers off.
You got a pension.
Well, exactly. But it's all these things that don't involve what their job is, going to work each day. And don't take me wrong, and they're also there for the right reasons, but when you hear them talk about the great things about their job, oftentimes they're talking about the other things I said, those kinds of perks, okay? Mm-hmm. Versus an entrepreneur that could actually control his own destiny. I'm excited to go into the office each day. What's going to happen next? You know, what am I going to learn from one of my clients? So it's... I always just encourage people to say, you know, listen, hey, you're spending a lot of time on this earth working and, you know,
working for the man,
find a job you actually like, you know what I mean? If all you're worried about is looking forward to retirement one day, that doesn't mean you really like your job very much.
I know. And then, you know, you get in your 40s, 50s, and there's no people think there's no turning back from that age point, you know, that I've done it for 20 years. I'm going to do it for 20 more years.
Yep. Yep. I, one of my chapters in the books book talks about that. And I use myself as an example. I, before I quit my job, I went and asked for a raise, and it was a substantial raise. And, I was hoping they'd give it to me. Yeah. But now that I look back, thank God they didn't give it to me. Yeah. They said, no, they said, I just can't
do
it. You
got the Heisman?
Listen, I was 27 years old. The environment there at the time was almost like a hierarchy. And for them, it just wouldn't have looked right in the culture if a 27-year-old was making more than 40-year-olds and blah, 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 and whatever. God bless them. It's a great company. And I think they've changed that model nowadays anyway. But the thing is, I'm really thanking them for not giving me that raise. Because if had they given me that raise, I might not ever have left. You know, I probably wouldn't have. And why is that? Because that salary goes up, I buy more things with it. I have more obligations with it. I get used to that lifestyle.
You get a new car.
Yeah, exactly. And now you got to walk away from that. And then as an entrepreneur, most entrepreneurs should be looking at this. I surely did. How long is it going to take me to replace my existing salary when I go out on my own? Okay. And the bigger
Who knows that answer, though? I feel like that's an answer you can't really quantify because you don't know.
Well, if for me it was quantifiable in the sense because I was leaving to go into the same industry, so I could kind of look at it, you know what I mean? I could look at it and say, okay, you know, our clients are worth X per year. If I get 12 clients, I'll be breaking even. How long is it going to take me to get 12 clients? Maybe a year and a half, you know what I mean? So I did the numbers like that, but you're absolutely right. If you're just saying, hey, I'm out of here and I'm leaving my accounting job to open up a pizza franchise, then, you know, you might have a more difficult time figuring that out.
It's a lot. And I don't know if you know this about me. Now, I did the research on John before he came onto this show, came into the studio, the MediaCaster studio. But I have written two books on how to start a business, how to be an entrepreneur. And I really wrote it as a guidebook for all my clients because I was telling them the same things over and over again. I'm like, here, grab my book. But there is so much involved. And if you're going into the same business, insurance, or, you know, starting a franchise pizza parlor, it's kind of pre-made for you. But what if you're starting a coaching business or you want to start a publishing business or writing books or being a graphic designer? What is your best advice for those people?
Yeah. You know, I always think if you're mature in your career, like as if you've been
over
40. Okay. Yeah. And really just anyone that's just working, that's relying on their salary right now. I recommend give yourself some runway so you can make some mistakes. You know what I mean? If your disposable income savings account stretches out to last you 4 months right now, maybe tighten up an extra year and get that to 7 or 8 months before you launch the business. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people too. Yeah, I mean, it depends what they are, but some of the things you just named, you could potentially start those out part-time or as a side hustle before it turns into a career too, right?
Oh my God. I never recommend someone just to say, sayonara, I'm starting a job. I'm starting my new business tomorrow and I have no idea what the heck I'm doing. You know, you have to be smart about it. You don't be stupid.
Well, I got to tell you, when you do start that other, when you keep your job and you're doing something else, all right, I believe, because at some point there's going to be an eclipse of where you're spending your time. And from an ethical standpoint, you know, you work and say you're some W-2 job and you're getting paid X. And during lunch and every, you know, hour you're at your work computer, you're checking your other business. At some point, there's going to be an eclipse where it starts to become almost unethical. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you got to make a decision and you shouldn't really be working there anymore. And you should quit your job and focus full time here. And, you know, I tell people that's the problem you want to have. When you get to that point, that's the good problem to have.
Right. No, I love that. And, you know, one particular person I'm thinking about, she is the breadwinner of her family. She makes a very nice living, but she cannot stand her job. And she's kind of slowly morphed into the business of corporate coaching. And it is really about the bottom line. And when you're talking about 2,000% raise, I think you're probably also talking about up-leveling and raising your life by 2,000% as well.
Exactly. The initial name of the book was specific to compensation, but I broadened the term greatly when I started the podcast.
The most amazing podcast.
Thank you. The specific term it was originally meant for would have lasted maybe two or three episodes. I needed to broaden that, and we do everything.
Do it.
Yeah, it could be in life too. You know, we have a financial focus professionally and just growth, but it's also just leveling up yourself with you know, in life in general.
Doesn't just thinking about the bottom line and finances just get old after a while? I mean, okay, when you're at a certain place and you don't care about money anymore, but right. Doesn't it just get old? Always thinking about.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you need shelter and Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You need shelter. You need safety, food. But right. At what point is it where you just shouldn't care?
Yeah. Well, I'll answer that two ways, I guess. You know, I think I was kind of at that point after I sold my company, I had an earnout with a private equity firm. And by the time that earnout was done, I was like, okay, I don't even want to think about money anymore. I'm just ready to put this behind me. And luckily I was in a position to, you know, enable me not to stress about it at least. And it wasn't until I started this podcast, Jules, that I became more intrigued just more globally with money, because there's so many different ways to skin a cat and make money. You know what I mean?
Look at how excited you look. You're like, your eyes are popping out of your head. You're like,
seriously, I got into this venture capital stuff and these founders and entrepreneurs.
What is venture capitalism?
So
I mean, I know, but you probably have a better idea.
The easiest way to put it is like Shark Tank, okay? Where people are.
Yep. I love myself some Shark Tank.
That's right. So that's what I do for a living now. I retired. And by the way, as a venture capitalist, you don't necessarily make any money. We could call it a job, call it a career. But really, you're investing. So on a regular basis, all these entrepreneurs coming to me and founders and pitching me ideas. And, you know, they're really just trying to raise money. And it's exciting because you're finding things out that, oh, crap, I never thought of that idea. That's a pretty cool idea. And oh, wait a minute. Okay. Like sports gambling is a big one right now, especially in Illinois. It's, you know, if you turn on the damn TV.
We're both from Illinois, if you haven't noticed. Got to get out of the state.
Well, I think there's about 20 states roughly right now. I think 25 or whatever, but call it 20 states right now that sports gambling is legalized. Mm-hmm. There's 30 states that it's not. Now, there's entrepreneurs, though, thinking that this is an immature space that's still going to be huge, kind of like cannabis in years past, where it used to be just California and Colorado, and over time
now it's Illinois. Exactly. Welcome, cannabis family.
And as all these other states seeing the revenue that they're missing out on, okay, that's starting to happen now with sports gambling, where more and more states are coming on. So anyhow, you know, stuff that I normally wouldn't see on the surface or think about, all these entrepreneurs are coming out in the tech space with applications for sports gambling. I go, whoa, that's a pretty crowded space. Yeah, but we're going to focus on, you know, Wisconsin, where it's not legal yet. And we're going to get players involved, like in a free-to-play game. And then when it comes there, a big company like FanDuel or Caesar's Palace or whomever is going to come and buy us out. And, you know, and maybe I invest, maybe I don't. But just hearing people's mindsets, you know what I mean? Like for me, I never built a company to sell it one day. I built a company to make money and help my clients. I was fortunate. Private equity came in and bought us for a lot of money. But
what do you mean by private equity bought us?
So private equity firms will, in my case, it was called a private equity roll-up approach, where they were buying it was a big insurance company was buying smaller insurance companies up and rolling them into their organization. You know, that's how it works. And they typically buy you for some kind of multiple of your revenue. So you have this huge payday. So like,
hello.
Exactly. So that's kind of what happened. I was like, I'm never selling my company. I'm going to hand it off to my kids one day and whatever. And then private equity entered the insurance space. And
damn, those kids, they can figure it out on their own, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're hungry. Sorry. They basically bought us for like 12. It would have taken me 12 more years to make what I made in the one transaction. So I'm like, okay, well, yeah, I never had private equity not been involved, then it never would have sold for that much. So I was very fortunate from that standpoint.
What does hitting a windfall like that do to you? Do as a human being? Because I know, like, if someone senses that you're famous or you have a lot of money, you make a lot of friends that truly aren't real friends.
Yeah,
or you gain negative attention.
That definitely happening. Mm-hmm. Has happened. You know, for me, when I built my company, there was a build. I owned it for almost 10 years. So there was a build where I was doing better and better each year financially. So I had kind of eased into it. It wasn't like I went from, you know, like rags to riches in one transaction. Mm-hmm. The biggest difference for me, though, was I was making that much money. And the reason private equity was buying me for that much was because I was making a lot of money. They would have done that if we weren't. So you know, the biggest game changer for me with that event, if you want to call it that, was that I didn't have to work anymore. So I go from spending all this time, I was 37 years old, looking in my rear office.
So old. Yeah.
I was 37, I was working my rear end off. It was 2015. And, then that happened and I didn't have to work anymore, which was, you know, crazy. Wait, is my math wrong? I hesitated. Wait, was it 2015? Was that 37? Yeah.
You're 44 now, right? Well, look at that research. Thanks, Google.
I'm not.
44.
I just turned 46 in December.
Oh, you're not that much younger than me.
Yeah. But I just turned 46. So I
see, this is what happens when you ask for a 2,000% raise. You have no idea how old you are.
Did I sell in 2014? Maybe I did. Anyway, no, I sold in 2015.
The devil's in the details.
I'm 46 now, but it's December of 2022 right now. So anyway, I'm going to have to get a calculator out. I'm confusing myself. But that was the biggest difference.
And you're a numbers person, right, too? Should I be?
I am. And if it wasn't going to be boring for your audience, I would like pause our interview right now.
I'm an editor. He can pause it.
I guess I was 38. I was 38.
So now we know you can do this at 38 years old. But, you know, I find it fascinating. You do this, you're calling your own shots, you start your own biz, and then you're kind of just, you know, I think what I really love is that you're calling your own shots. You are calling the 2,000% raise. Mm-hmm. But now you have even more control, so to speak, over your life. I mean, you can go to Mexico for a week. You can do a podcast. You can write a book.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
What does the future hold for someone that is calling these shots and who's living life as an X-ing it?
And by the way, my math was screwed up. I was 38.
Oh, here he's going back, you guys. How old is he? He has no idea.
I was supposed to do an employment contract for 5 years after I sold it. I only ended up doing it 4.5 years. That's when the math was screwed up. The process started when I was 37.
We forgive you here at the Media Casters.
Your audience could be like, this guy's full of shit. He doesn't even know what he sold this company.
But it's because you've been just like living your life. So you don't think about these things.
Yeah. No, but you know, the biggest thing for me in that regard is, and it's something I'm still wrapping my head around, is this: you spend your whole life building, trying to, you know, make money and saving money, putting it away. Mm-hmm. I was never doing stupid shit when I was younger. Like, I lived downtown Chicago and I was like, you know, all the cool kids are driving their, you know, Lamborghinis and buying boats. I never did any of that shit, knowing I was in financially way better position than a lot of people that were. And because I was always trying to save. And then when I got to the point where I'm at, you're now spending because I don't have any. I don't have any money coming in, so it's so now it's like money going out instead of in, and it's you know, it's a paradigm shift.
It's so fascinating to me, and it's a lifestyle. So many people are just driven to live by, but yet so many people are caught up in that cycle of the corporate handcuffs. So I love that. What would be the best tips that you could give somebody to kind of take that leap, to start calling their shots, to ask for, from themselves, really, a 2,000% raise?
Yeah. Well, I always recommend, and I know this is not realistic for everybody, or maybe the people aren't going to be passionate about it as much, but I like to tell people to say, evaluate yourself within your industry and start a job within the industry, or start a company within the industry that you're already in, or at least evaluate what your worth is to that organization. Okay. Some roles are a lot easier to figure this out. If you're in like a production or a sales rep role, okay, figure out how much of the company's resources you're using in that sales process. All right. Well, again, and it's like, okay, how much money are you bringing in? Now, depending on what you're selling, the math could get a little bit, you know, more complicated, but how much are you making? Do you have an account manager that's helping you? Do you have a manager that's actually active? How much would a office rent be? And then compare that number versus the money that you're actually bringing in. And, you know, that's what the company is making off of you, and start looking at it, you know, through that lens. Now, if you're not passionate about an industry that you're in, you know, but you want to, you know, you want to be a business owner, find something that you're actually interested in and get a job in that industry before you turn around and start your company. The only exception to that would be is if you went to like a franchise model or something like that, where they're going to train you and they're going to hold your hand in. But I tell people though, like, you know, you don't, you know, if you've been a PR, you've worked at a PR agency, don't turn around and order, you know, start a nail salon, or don't start a med spa.
Right.
You know, like people come up with the idea that they could start a med spa because they go to med spas a lot.
I mean, yeah, they like Botox.
Exactly. So.
No, that's fascinating. It's staying in your own lane, but being creative as well and doing it the right way, finding those anchors, finding those mentors like John Sarasani.
He's
amazing. And I think everybody out here needs to do a self-evaluation, a self-audit on their lives, their professional lives, and are they doing the thing that is going to feed them to their very last breath?
Right.
And I cannot wait for your book to come out, 2,000% raise. John Sarasani. And also, you have to listen to his podcast. Everything is going to be in the show notes. And we're going to finally figure out how old he is.
Okay.
That is what we're dying to know. How old is he?
And exactly.
Still calculating it in his head. It's a pleasure. And follow him on Instagram. He's got an amazing feed. He's inspirational. And he'll give you kind of that little push to think about things differently. So thank you so much, John, for being here. I'm a huge fan, and you are always welcome here on the MediaCasters. So I end every episode by asking every guest to say, let's kick it. Let's do it.
For joining
let's
another
kick it.
Episode
let's
of
kick
Creative
it.
Creative Entrepreneur Podcast with your favorite entrepreneurs, Julie Loken, Lauren Erickson, and Dominic Damaski. Don't forget to follow us, rate, review, and subscribe to the Creative Entrepreneur Podcast. Until we meet again, keep creating.